Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. I want to say hello to everyone. This is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, and you're listening to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. We do want to take just a moment. We always do. And if you're in the listening area, we would love for you to come by and visit with us at Mount Lebanon. We are located at 1128 Baird's Creek Road. That is just above the Willow Creek Golf Course. And we have Sunday school every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Then our Sunday morning worship service is at 11 a.m. And every Wednesday night at 7, we have our midweek prayer and Bible study, second and fourth Sunday nights at 6, our Sunday night service. And so lots of opportunities to come by and visit with us. You'd be more than welcome to do that. We also have our church website that has our has sermons on it. It has archived radio broadcast. If you've missed one, you'd like to get caught up, you can go there and just click on the tab under radio. But we are thankful to be here today. I want to say hey to Noah. We missed him last week, but he's back with us today. How's your day, Noah?
It's going well. I'm glad to be back here. And do want to say welcome to those listening in right here on AM 1450 WATA 96.5 out of Boone, North Carolina. Those who listen in on AM 690 WZAP out of Bristol, Virginia. And our listeners on 89.1 FM The Truth out of Watertown, South Dakota.
We do appreciate all of our listeners, and we've been studying for several weeks now. In fact, nine or ten weeks. This is the ninth part, I guess you could say, or the ninth study. We've been studying on the subject of foundations in early American education. And we've taken quite a bit of time to get to the point that we are at today. But up to this point, our focus has been, we've been looking at the history of education in America, and we've been focusing on elementary, what we would call elementary, the early years of education. We've been talking a lot and focusing on the subject of this is a foundation. The Bible says in Psalms chapter 11 and verse number 3, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? And if you study education in early America, what you find was there was a emphasis on what they used to call the three R's, jokingly. I know this, they don't all start with R, but they said reading, writing, and arithmetic. And so that was the three R's, and that's what they focused on. And they thought if they, some of it was just that's the best they could do under the circumstances. But they did believe that it was important to teach children to read, to write, to do math. But early on in our country, there was also an emphasis upon religious teachings and morality. And those sort of go hand in hand. We talked about the early textbooks in America and how this is foundational even today. There are things that we refer to. We may not even know where they come from. But if you study it out, you'll find that they come from these early textbooks that we had in America. And primarily, we could say there's four. Number one, believe it or not, was the Bible. The Bible was the most readily available. And so many homes in our country, many households, many schools use the Bible for reading, for literature, for spelling, for moral lessons, for story time. I know that a lot of study Bibles, and I have a variety of them, but I have one study Bible, and in the back it's got golden readings for children. And you think about a lot of the stories were read to classrooms and to children growing up. And we talked about the very first textbook in America, the first one that was printed and used in America was in the northern colonies, and it was called the New England Primer. And the New England Primer was used for generations to teach children how to read. And I mentioned this several weeks ago, but there's that little prayer you've probably heard. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. That is found in the New England Primer. And so that's what I was saying. A lot of things that we refer to, we don't even know where they come from. That come from America's first textbook. And there's a lot of other examples that we gave early on. Then we spent a lot of time talking about Noah Webster. And Noah Webster is known as the father of American scholarship and education. And the textbook that was most popular was called the Blueback Speller. And the Blueback Speller, it said that Noah Webster educated five generations of Americans. No textbook has ever been printed to the extent that the Blueback Speller was printed. It was printed for over 100 years. And that's why they say that Noah Webster taught five, six, probably more than that, generations of Americans. He not only had the Blueback Speller, he had readers. He's most known today as the dictionary. Most people would associate the word Webster with a dictionary. And we talked a great deal about Noah Webster. His lessons also, they not only included an introduction to reading, writing, spelling. There was an emphasis on religion. There was an emphasis on moral lessons. But Noah Webster also included civic lessons. And so he taught young Americans about our government, the uniqueness of it, our system of government, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our Declaration of Independence, our three branches of government, and on and on and on. And Noah Webster thought that that was very, very important. And so he included civics along with his readers. So you're learning to read, you're learning to write, you're learning to spell. You're also learning, as you're learning to read, you're being ingrained with moral lessons, with patriotic lessons, with lessons about our country, our government, all of these things. This is how children were educated in America early on. And then after that, there was what is called the McGuffey readers. The McGuffey readers came after the Blueback Speller. And they were in use. In fact, they are still in use today. Our family, Noah can testify to this fact, that a lot of homeschoolers will still order and use the McGuffey readers. Even today, they have, along with learning to read, and it just starts out very, very basic, and it's stuff like See Spot Run, you know, it's very basic, but you get on over in those readers, and it just introduces reading very simply, and it also has moral lessons, and so situations, what's the right thing to do? And those are still in print, they are available. They're used today by homeschoolers. So you think about foundations. The Bible says, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? These readers, the Bible number one, and then these other readers, this is the foundation for education early on in America and still in use today. So look what we're talking about. We're talking about a time period of some 400 years now. From the very early 1600s right on up through the McGuffey readers being used today. So we're looking at four books or four sets being used in the education of our country. Now, I know modern education. We've not got to that yet. We've not said a great deal about it. But I'm saying these foundations, how very, very important it is. Now, that in and of itself is an amazing fact. To think about our country and the influence of just a little bit of work. Noah Webster's work, the McGuffey readers, the New England Primer. But I said last week that what we're getting ready to do, we're getting ready to graduate. We're going to go from elementary, the elementary part of education, to the university. And really, and I know we've been 9 weeks in this study so far, but the idea or the thought for this, this whole study, everything we've looked at so far, and what we're getting ready to look at today, began at the University of Florida. Now, a lot of our listeners know my daughter Abigail. She got married last August, and her husband, he goes to the University of Florida. That's where they live. They live in Gainesville, Florida. So if you see me out in town and I have a Gators hat on, that's why. I didn't go, and I really didn't know anything about it till Jackson came along. And in fact, he's here in the studio with us today. They got the, or they're at home over Martin Luther weekend, and got a lot going on there. But anyway, it just so happens he's here in the studio with us today, and we're glad to have him. But we were visiting down there. We went down there in September, and Jackson was showing us around the campus, and it's a beautiful campus. And he was showing us, you know, all the highlights of it. We went to the student union. We went to a football game, Ben Griffith Stadium. We saw the Tim Tebow statue outside, and we sat on that big gator that's out there, you know. And so we got the tour of the whole thing. But as I was looking around at the campus, what I would say is that the centerpiece of the whole campus, there's this huge bell tower, and it plays music. It's got bells in it. It's called the Bells of the Century Tower. There's a plaque at it. And I even noticed when we were sitting in the football stadium, and of course we had seats up pretty high, if you look out over the edge of it, you could still see that tower over there. So that's the centerpiece, and it's beautiful. And I think the plaque said that the bells were cast in 1978, 1979, something like that. And there's a plaque there. It gives the history. It says that this was a gift to the students, past and present. But there was an inscription there, and I took a picture of it, and I've carried this around. I've thought about this for several months. Now, this is what got me thinking about this study on the history of education in America. There's a plaque, and it has an inscription. And about those bells at that tower, and keep in mind, this is the centerpiece of the campus. I mean, everybody that visits, I would think they would go there, they would see this. And it says this. It says, "Call together those who are studious of all good things, both human and divine." And so those bell towers, the inscription on it, what is it saying that they're there for? When you go to that centerpiece, when you go and look at that, the highlight for me of the visit to the campus, and there's a chapel there beside of it as well. And so it's just a beautiful little thing to go visit. But it's saying, call together those who are studious of all good things, both human and divine. And that got me thinking. That started the wheels turning in my mind, that here's something that is so prominent on campus, and it's old, but it's saying to call together all that are studious to study good things, both human and divine. And the Gators, they have a thing going on. I don't know if this is this year. I don't know if it's every year, but like if you look on social media, a lot of the things they do, they have hashtag Gator Good, and talking about good things they're doing in the community, in the world. And so there's an emphasis, and hey, that's a good thing. I mean, good is good. And so they're emphasizing that, you know, we're trying to do some good in this world. Well, why? Well, it goes back to the foundations. We look at the foundations, not just that university, but then I got to thinking about all the other universities. And we've said many, many times on this radio broadcast that when you study American history, you find God's hand. Here's another way to put it. When you study American history, you find God's handprint. You find God's fingerprints all over our history. You would have to just be in flat-out denial to not recognize or not see the emphasis that God, the Bible, Judaism, Christianity has upon our American history. Our founders, I know a lot of times they are taught about, especially today, as being not what they were. I mean, history is twisted many times. But if you study about the founders of our country, many of these men were God-fearing men. They wanted to do right. They tried to do right by their country and by their countrymen. Not all of them were born-again Christians, but they feared the Lord. They respected the things of God. They read the Bible. They knew what the Bible taught about things. These were God-fearing people. Our documents that we have, our Declaration of Independence mentions the Lord by name four times. The Bill of Rights, the very first thing that is mentioned is freedom of religion. The handprint of the divine is all over our history. Even the Constitution. I've heard it said, well, the Constitution, it's a secular document. It doesn't say anything about the Lord. It doesn't say anything about God or the Bible. And, I just sort of believed that for a long time until I was reading and studying the Constitution. And there's one part in the Constitution, I believe it's in Section 1, and it's talking about Congress. And it's talking about what Congress does and what their responsibilities are. And it's talking about how they do their business and when they're going to do their business. And there's a parenthesis in there. And it just simply says this, accepting Sundays. So when it's talking about Congress and what they're going to do in their business and how they're going to carry it out, all the things they're going to do, this is what they're going to do, except on Sunday. Why? Why not take Monday off? Why not take Wednesday off? Why not take Saturday off? They were taking Sunday off because they were God-fearing people. They took Sunday off because Sunday was the Lord's day. And even the important business of the whole nation was going to come to a stop on Sunday because Sunday is the Lord's day. And I think that's very interesting when you find that in the Constitution. Our struggles for independence, the prayers of our leaders, the declarations, and on and on and on. You find God's fingerprint all over our American history. Well, you also find God's fingerprint upon the universities of our country. And so you study about early education in America. We've studied about the elementary and how they taught. Well, what about when they moved on? What about when they went to higher learning? What about when they went to school? And of course, early on, they didn't have, like we have today, they didn't have kindergarten and middle school and, high school. Men went to college when they were 14, 15 years old. A lot of them had been homeschooled. They'd been taught at home, and they'd learned from a tutor maybe, and they had been preparing. What were they doing? They were preparing them to go to university. And so God's handprint is on the university as well. That little plaque that has that saying, it says, call together those who are studious of all good things, both human and divine, where it says of all good things. I have said this several times before, I know, but James chapter 1:17 says, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. And so when we talk about good things, let me tell you something. Maybe you've never thought about this before. God has the monopoly on good. Every good thing, every good gift, every good action, every good act can be traced back to God. If it's good, it's from God. Good has one source, and it is God. And so I think that's interesting. When you're talking about good, you've got to give credit to God. That's where good comes from. Now, historically in America, the university was a place of training for divine service, meaning Harvard, Yale, these Ivy League schools, they were started to train ministers, to train preachers of the gospel, to train pastors of churches. That's why they were started. These oldest universities, what we call the Ivy League schools, Harvard, Yale, Princeton Theological Seminary, one of the oldest universities in America, was started by the New Light Presbyterians. The New Light Presbyterians are the branch of Presbyterians that came out of the Great Awakening. You know, we've talked about Jonathan Edwards before, and the famous message, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. And I'll tell you, there was a division in our country between the old and the new. The old established, dead state church. And then there was a Great Awakening, and people began to come to the Lord. They began to get converted. They were saved in massive numbers. And they called them New Lights. Well, these New Lights even, they recognized that the old established, like Harvard and Yale, that they weren't really getting the job done, so they started their own universities. So a lot of universities in this country were started in a quest for religious truth. Princeton was that way. Brown was a Baptist school. Harvard, if we go back to that, Harvard is the oldest in our nation, and it was established to train ministers. I talked about Noah Webster. He started Amherst Academy, which was Amherst College. They started Amherst because Harvard was liberal and Harvard had become Unitarian. And so they started another college to offset the first one. And so, you know, people talk about church splits and they throw off on that. Well, what about college splits? What about university splits? A lot of universities were started in a quest for religious truth. Now, the original motto of Harvard, and I was studying about this and I was looking it up yesterday. If you type in Harvard and you look at the motto, the seal, and I mean that's everywhere. Every college campus has a seal, a motto, and you look at that motto, a lot of them are written in Latin. The original motto for Harvard was Christo et Ecclesia, Latin. And it means this, for Christ and for the church. And that Christo et Ecclesia is surrounded by the word veritas. Veritas means truth. And so for Christ and the church, and that surrounds the truth, these universities were established to search for knowledge and truth. Today, though, the motto, the for Christ and church, has been taken away. And all it says is veritas, which means truth. But the ironic thing about that is, if you take Christ, if you take the truth of the church away, you also take the truth away. When you ban, when you outlaw, or when you bully out of discussion one point, you might as well be a communist school. And here's what I mean by that. You can, if you go to Russia, Russia is going to teach you communism. They're going to teach you socialism. And they are going to ban studying Western thought. Or it's going to be very slanted against freedom, against our way of government. And so you have, instead of a true seeking after knowledge and truth, what you have is propaganda. What you have is brainwashing. When you take one area and you put it on the shelf, or you put it in behind a door and you lock that door and you say, we're going to study everything else, but we're not going to study Christ, we're not going to study the Bible, we're not going to study this, then you're really not seeking after truth and knowledge anymore. And so if you take a school and they say, we're going to take Christ and we're going to put him in the corner and we're not going to, well, are you really seeking after truth? Not only American universities were started for the purpose of seeking after truth and knowledge, and they felt like, and their mission was that Christ and the church and truth, that all these things went together, but many of the European universities were the same way. One of the oldest universities in Europe is in Germany, the Freiburg University, and their motto is this, the truth shall make you free. Now, I had that in German, but I thought I'm not going to make a stab at it because I don't really know it. I'm sure I would mess it up, but that comes out of John chapter 8, verse 32. The truth shall make you free. No truth, no freedom. Truth brings freedom. America's the freest country in the world. Why? Because we've had a thirst and a knowledge for truth. And that truth comes from the Lord Jesus Christ. So the goal of a university ought to be knowledge. That we're going to seek after knowledge and we're going to find it. And it doesn't matter where it leads us. If it leads us to the Bible, so be it. But truth is of utmost importance. We shouldn't be afraid of knowledge. We shouldn't be afraid of truth. The original intent, that's what it was. The present way that things are done, a lot of times that's not the way it is. Many times it's totally different. Now, I want to take just a few minutes, and I want to introduce you to a gentleman. His name is Charles Malick. When I say that, I don't mean he's here with us, but some of his writings. Charles Malick, he passed away in 1987. He was born in 1906. He was a Christian, but the Western world, and I'm reading just a little bit here, the Western world knew him, knew and revered Dr. Malick primarily as an international diplomat. He served the United Nations in a variety of positions, including chairing the committee which drafted the final text of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights adopted in 1948. He was born in Lebanon, so he was an American, but he worked with the United Nations, and he wrote a little booklet, and it was called A Christian Critique of the University. If you can get your hands on that, and it's available online, it's very interesting. He was very well qualified, very highly educated, but Dr. Malick was a born-again Christian. And he said this in his little paper about the Christian critique of the university. He said the university is one of the greatest creations of Western civilization. And he goes into the history of universities, and I know there's universities all over the world, but he credits the creation of universities to Western civilization, Western thought. And he gives the example, if you go to a university in China or Russia or the Middle East, it's not the same as going to a university in Europe or America. And he makes a big long case about that. I thought it was very interesting. But he has a little paragraph here, and he talks about the university's dominant influence. And I want you to think about this in preparation for our study next week. He said, this great Western institution, the university, dominates the world today more than any other institution, more than the church, more than the government, more than all other institutions. Well, how come? Listen to what he says. All the leaders of government are graduates of universities, or at least of secondary schools or colleges, whose administrators and teachers are themselves graduates of universities. The same applies to all church leaders. How can you create economically without some technical training? But the technical schools which provide this training are some sort of mini universities. And their administrators and instructors are themselves graduates of colleges, universities, or technical institutes. The professional doctors, engineers, lawyers, etc. have all passed through the mill of a secondary school, the college, and the university. And the men of the media are university trained. And some have undergone specialized advanced instruction in communication and journalism. So he makes the case that the university influences the whole world. Everybody is tied in with the university. This is why it is so very, very important. So we're talking about, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? Think about how important the university is. And this is why it ought to be paid attention to. This is why it ought to be reached with the gospel. And so we appreciate our efforts at Mount Lebanon and the Collegians for Christ ministry and all they're doing. We're going to get into this study on the subject of the university. So thank you for listening today. Noah's going to come give her contact information. Have a great day. And God bless.
You've been listening to Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wynn Greer, the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. It's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us through our church phone number at 828-963-4596 or our church website at mountlebanonbc.org.
Do you need new boots, jeans, or a coat? Now's the time to save at Watson Auto Western World. During their